Ryan drew the honed cleaver from his belt, feeling the wooden hilt match his fingers. The balance of the 18-inch blade was perfect for hacking in a melee like this one, and he waded in, lips pulled off his teeth in a ferocious grin. He swung it in a singing figure eight, holding off the pair of muties, forcing them to retreat toward the counter. One thrust at him with the spear, and Ryan chopped the point off. The mutie stopped, jaw gaping at Ryan's speed and power. It was all the chance the one-eyed angel of death needed. A feint toward the face, and then a devastating blow to the thigh. The panga snapped the long bone, severing the femoral artery and putting a fourth mutant down on the floor. His blood gushed out, patterning the polished metal of the serving counter. The other mutie facing Ryan turned to run, realizing that the ambush had failed. But Ryan wasn't done.
No, you don't, you asshole!
In three quick steps, he overtook the scuttling little figure, the blood-slick blade hefted high. He brought it hacking down to splinter the collarbone on the right side of the stubby neck, angling sideways into the throat. Five down, five to go. If you face someone with a knife in a confined space and you can't get away, then you get in close. Christy Roth knew that, and she dove at her opponent. Its flesh was moist and smelled of the taint of corruption, overlaid with a sour chemical scent that was literally sickening. Christy fought for breath against the nauseous stench of the mutie. She fought with a cold, analytic, ruthless intensity, clearing her mind of anything but the need to survive and conquer. Back in her home Ville of Harmony, Christy's uncle, Tyus McCann, had once said he'd heard a notorious hired killer say that when he did a good job, he reached an acceptable level of ecstasy. She'd never forgotten that phrase. The muties suffered from multi-digits. There were 11 fingers and 3 thumbs on the right hand, and nearly as many on the left, most of them stubby, residual little pink paddles of limp flesh. When she grabbed at the man's knife hand, Christy felt a momentary wave of revulsion as she broke off several of the creature's useless fingers. It tried to pull itself free, but Christy wasn't about to let it go. She reached around for the knife she always carried, but her hands were slippery and she couldn't grasp the hilt.
Ryan! Help me!
He was there, appearing behind the mutie's shoulder, steel blade dropping crimson, actually steaming in the cold air of the redoubt. He grabbed at the flapping coat of the mutie, tugging him away from Christy, sending him dancing off balance. The first cut lopped the mutie's right hand off the arm, blood gouting high, while the second, reversed blow, ripped open the mutie's stomach, emptying his intestines onto the floor. Four left. Doc ran another of their attackers through the center of the chest, withdrawing the rapier with an almost casual elegance. The mutie clutched at the wound, slumping to the floor dead.
Touché.
Three of the screeching mutants were still alive and on their feet. Seeing that they had lost the fight, with most of their group dead, the survivors turned away, facing only Jack. The muties were all in line with Doc and Lori, and the boy couldn't risk drawing his pistol. He stood, arms by his side, staring at the gibbering trio of muties. Ryan had gone for his G12, but it wasn't the time or the place for the lethal firepower of the gray automatic rifle. He could only stand and watch the 14-year-old boy.
Come on, bastards!
Jack's confidence stopped the muties in their tracks, leaving them waving their spears and knives in a half-hearted threat.
Okay, stay where you are then.
Jack's hands weaved a deadly pattern, faster than Ryan's eye could follow, flickering from side to side. Steel danced in the slim white fingers, spinning through the air like tiny turning mirrors.
Gaia!
Fireblast.
Not bad, kid.
Don't call me kid.
Each of the three throwing knives had found its target. The talent of the albino boy was staggering, verging on the magical. Using both left and right hands, he'd thrown three different knives at three different enemies and chilled them all as effectively as a 12-bore charge through the head. 10 down, none to go. When they reached the dorms, Ryan made sure the door at the farther end was closed and bolted, and he set guards in pairs to watch the other entrance to the long room.
If 10 got in, then 100 could.
Yeah, the sooner we get out through the gateway, the better. I had thought about staying here for a few days. Better not. Let's sleep now, and then get the ammo and supplies in the morning. And then get the long winter out of here.
They made up beds from the tattered mattresses and thick, dark brown blankets, still showing the stenciled letters USFNY in their corners. Most of the overhead lights were out, giving the place the cold gloom of an Arctic cavern. Despite the discomfort and the threat of a further attack, all six warriors managed to sleep surprisingly well. Someone had picked over the shelves of self-heats since they were last in the Mohawk Redoubt. The obvious guess was the Muties, though not even Jack's morning exploration had revealed a way they could have gotten into the old military complex. But there were still enough cans left for them to activate for breakfast. Ryan found he was eating yellow soup and some sort of minced fruit. The labels had faded away sometime in the past 100 years. The others had different mixes. Jack opened 9 cans before he found one that wasn't a particularly unpleasant pale blue slush, warmed by the chemicals triggered by opening the ring pull, to around 20 degrees centigrade. They hunted down the ammo section of the redoubt. This time, Ryan took even greater precautions, keeping everyone an extended rec file to avoid a repeat of the situation in the dining hall, where they'd been ambushed while in a group. He took point himself, moving slow and careful, only beckoning up Christy, second in line, when he was sure the section was safe. Then he moved on, while she called up Jack Lauren, then Lori, Doc, and JB, keeping a good distance between each of them. There was no further sign of muties, but there was clear evidence that they'd penetrated deep into the rambling complex, urine stains on concrete walls, and piles of excrement scattered along the corridors. There was also some crude graffiti, daubs in red and black, most of them completely impossible to understand. A few were the usual porno stuff, men with gigantic penises and women with absurdly huge breasts.
Seen double paw swampies draw like this?
I regret to say that I have seen similar defacements streaked all over the heart of some of the finest and most civilized cities that this planet ever saw.
It was with relief that Ryan filled his pockets with more of the light caseless rounds for the G-12.
Happiness is a full mag.
Ryan, look at this.
JB was pointing to the contents of a large wooden box that he'd found under one of the benches. It was marked USFNY, like everything else in the redoubt.
What have you got?
Equiloy. Haven't seen any in years.
Ryan had first joined the traveling guerrilla leader called the Traitor around 10 years ago, just a few months before the Armorer enrolled with him on Warwag 1. He'd seen plenty of ammo in his time, but he couldn't recall Equiloy. The name rang a bell, but he couldn't pin down where he'd heard it.
Refresh my memory.
Aluminum bullets, self-lube, nylon-coated. Great!
Now I remember. Sure. They got a flat trajectory, don't they?
That's what I heard. Triple velocity.
Right, kid.
Don't call
me... Sorry, kid. Triple's right. But when they hit someone, the bullet stops quick, and all the kinetic energy keeps right on going. Blows your guts apart with the shock.
What caliber they got?
9mm, 357. Nothing for Doc.
I'm fine, thank you, Mr. Dix. I have what I need here in the pockets of my frock coat.
It was late morning by the time they'd all stocked up on food, drink, and ammunition, each member of the group taking a backpack, adjusting the straps to fit, and loading them up. Pressed by Ryan, Doc Tanner finally persuaded Lori to change her clothes. Helped by Christy, the tall blonde went into the next section of the redoubt and discarded the satin blouse and short red skirt. She emerged wearing a vac-sealed, dark blue navy-style shirt and a cotton skirt in the same color, cut to the knee. When she came out again, Doc Tanner went and kissed her hand, stooping over it like an old-fashioned courtier, smiling at the worried expression on Lori's face.
Cheer up, child.
I'm not too pretty like I am before, but I keep my boots on.
Keep them on and welcome, my dearest child. And you still look pretty.
Don't!
You look delicious, my darling little captivator, even when you wear nothing at all.
Doc! I'm surprised at you talking like that. I really am.
By the 3 Kennedys, Miss Roth, I swear that I had no intention of offending anyone by speaking.
You're blushing, you old bastard. Good to see you can show some shame.
The 6 companions finally made their cautious way through the silent corridors toward the entrance to the gateway. Since they'd been inside the redoubt, they hadn't seen any sign of intruders. Ryan wondered whether the group they'd managed to chill had been the only ones who'd penetrated the defenses. With her new clothes, Lori seemed to have taken on a new confidence. She insisted on leading the way, with Jack at her elbow. Although the girl wasn't good with words, she had an almost uncanny sense of direction, which might have been the result of being born and raised in a similar rambling redoubt up in the bitter cold of Alaska. At one point, she cut off from the main passage and took them through a series of interconnecting rooms, all of them stripped and empty.
I think we've gone the wrong way.
No, quickest this directions.
There was a narrow staircase, dust gathered on the treads, and she led them down, then through what seemed to have been some sort of scientific laboratory. One section of the corridor had completely lost its lighting, and they picked their way cautiously through the blackness.
Lover, I thought I heard something moving. Somewhere behind and above us.
Before Ryan could respond, he saw the open door ahead of them where the lights were working. They walked through it and into a short passageway with several open doors on either side. Jack stopped in front of one and darted in, coming out with something in his hand.
What's that?
Glove. On table in there. Got something inside.
What kind of something?
Shit!
Jack dropped the old gray gauntlet to the floor.
What was it, Jack?
Inside it. Bones. Fingers. Hand. All the bones.
Once located, they knew the gateway had the same coating as the main entrance to the redoubt. Ryan pressed the buttons, and nothing happened. When he tried it again, the sextile double doors remained stubbornly shut.
Fire blast. That tears up the contract, doesn't it? What do we do now? Doc, any ideas?
It will take a load of explosives to blow them open, Ryan. The risk of damage to the main Mattrans controls is very serious.
Yeah, I figured that too.
Ryan looked up at the sign over the doors, the same sign that appeared on every gateway he'd ever seen. It bore the same black lettering, compact and neat. Entry absolutely forbidden to all but B-12 cleared personnel. Mattrans. He examined the clear plast panel, with its small illuminated numbers and letters.
Think Muti's broke it?
No sign of damage.
Ryan, the moving stopped above us. Could be coming closer on this level. There's a lot of turns and walls. We might not hear them.
The prospects if the gateway was locked off from them were difficult to evaluate. It would mean heading back out into the inhospitable valley and taking their chances on breaking free of any muties in the mountains around them.
Try again.
Yeah, why not?
Ryan carefully pressed the 3-digit code. The glowing yellow light behind the number 2 flickered and went out. He tapped it firmly, like a man checking a barometer for the next day's weather. The light steadied, so he tried the numbers once more. The doors hissed apart, revealing the main control room inside, with its banks of switches, buttons, and multicolored light display.
Eureka!
Better close it as soon as we're through, lover.
Damn number 2 light's gone out again. No, God, the goddamn closing mechanism won't function at all.
Never mind, let's get in the gateway chamber and move on out of here.
Beyond the electronics-packed room was a smaller chamber, containing only a rectangular table and a steel cupboard. Someone had carved his initials on the plastop of the table, the letters FM. In passing, Ryan wondered what kind of person FM had been, and how he'd faced up to the chilling. Christy looked like she was about to say something, then she shook her head. Ryan raised an eyebrow.
What's up, lover?
It doesn't feel right. Can't hear anything, but it just doesn't feel clean.
Muties?
Gotta be. But I don't know where they are, or how close.
Then let's get in now.
As they went into the actual gateway room, Ryan noticed that there was an extra set of controls by the armored glass door, with a linked console. He hadn't noticed it while on the way out of the chamber all those months ago.
What's that, Doc?
What's what, my dear Ryan? Ah, those. Those are Krontrans repeater panels.
Krontrans? Is that a time jump? What do you mean, repeater panels?
Part of Project Cerberus. I should know better than most. Better than any man living, I should say. I don't believe that there were ever any other successful experiments with trawling, although there were rumors and stories of... But I dismissed them as the most arrant taradiddle.
Could we try it, Doc?
No, my dear young fellow, no. This is only part of the control unit. A repeater. Somewhere, very well hidden and sec-locked, will be the main console for the time-travel section of the gateway.
Can't it be worked from here? Do you have to set the main controls as well, Doc?
Yes.
You're lying, Doc. I know it, and you know it.
I know it too, Doc. You can't do that to us.
I apologize, my friends. Yes, you can work the gateway on Kronset from here. But to do so is to tamper with the works of God.
Fire blasted, Doc. That's a load of crap. What the hell do you think the Mattrans is? Isn't that against the works of your god? And how come your god's so terrific if he lets the world blow up in his face?
Hey, calm it, lover.
Yeah. All right, Doc. I shouldn't have held down on the trigger like that. But what's the difference between Mattrans and Krontrans? Tell me that, Doc.
Come on.
You're absolutely correct, my friend. Both are against the laws of nature. But there is a difference. The transfer of material, or of people, generally works.